At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
A warmer from the low. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Heaps with myself, Greg Heaps Peterson, now part of the Beeson Family Podcast. We've got a great podcast for you guys. Joining me in segment number two is Curtis Rogers, who does such good work over at 710 Seattle Sports. We're going to be recapping all that we saw over the weekend, taking a look at a lot of these conference tournaments that are going to be happening out here in lovely Las Vegas this weekend. We're going to be taking a little bit of a look at the Big Sky and so much more with him as we break down a lot of Monday's games with Curtis in segment number two. In the final segment, we're going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Monday as we hit some bank shots. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, do have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at GNN_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline and other ways find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you are able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. And did not get in any of those old Twitter/X questions today, but we had a fun day of college basketball on Sunday. Let's take a look back at it, try to find some trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the Rowdy recap.
We all talk about the best cover 8 team in all of college basketball, Minnesota. How about if we put a little bit of respect on the name of Stony Brook, though, who's now 23-8-1 against the spread as an underdog. They got the job done once again on Sunday as it took a pair of overtimes, but Stony Brook takes down Drexel by a count of 91-88 for Stony Brook. They attempt 16 threes in a game that went to double overtime, by the way, but they were able to get some very big performances. Charles Madeau, 25 points, 9 boards. Aaron Clark threw in there, 27 points. And here's the most impressive thing that we did see. Both of these teams combined for 11 turnovers in this double overtime game. Neither team turned it over as you were able to have 28 big points out of Luke House on the flip side for a Drexel team that's been pretty solid all season long. But Stony Brook, they are able to win the rebound battle 46-42 against a really good rebound rate team in Drexel. So they survive, they advance, and they get the job done. We saw some Big Ten action on Sunday as well with Indiana taking down Michigan State by a count of 65-64. And it has been just all over the place as far this season for Michigan State as they just couldn't knock down shots in this one. 8 of 25 from three-point range. They shoot 38.5% from the floor. And Khalil Ware was just that guy in this game. 28 points, 12 boards. It's been a rough year for Indiana, to say the least, as they're right around about 15-15-1 against the spread, but it's also been a rough year for Michigan State. A team with high expectations just has not lived up, although they are 16-14-1 against the spread. I think that speaks a little bit more to the Big Ten, as right now you've got one of the worst cover eight teams in all of college basketball out there. That'd be Michigan, and they got clocked once again. 85-70. They just get completely rolled by a Nebraska team that continues to make you money. 20-11 against the spread, as Nebraska goes 7-21 from three. Michigan 9 of 28 from 3. Doug McDaniel did all that he could. 5-7 from 3, 17 points. But for Michigan, they lose their turnover battle 9-8. They lose a rebound battle. And then you had Casey Shomanaga just continue to be awesome. 30 points. He had some nice shots in this one. We're hoping to hit more shots with our DK Network write-up picks, as I took Rutgers, and it's not every day that you see a team get to the free throw line more, win the turnover battle, win the offensive rebound battle 13-6, and lose by 22 points. 73-51 the final. This was just bad on me. I should not be trusting in this Rutgers offense. It was just all sorts of ghastly in this one. They shoot 27.3% from the floor, 60.5% at the free throw line. Meanwhile, Ohio State, they've really gotten hot under Jake Diebler. They've only lost one game ever since he's been in the fold. 9 of 20 from three-point range for them. And Roddy Gale, he was able to throw in their 14 points, as it was really just a collective for Ohio State that was able to get it done there. For Wisconsin, they hand Purdue a non-cover. Wisconsin loses this game 78-70, but I mean, for Wisconsin, how about the bonsai charge that they went on to be able to get this cover, as they were down by a count of 77-62 with less than 2 minutes remaining. They're able to score 8 of the final 9 points of the game to be able to get you to the window, as Wisconsin goes just 5-24 from three-point range. Purdue, 9 of 18 from 3. Zach Edey, 25 points, 14 boards, 3 blocks. He just completely dominated this game. But A.J. Storr, Tyler Wall were able to give you 17 points apiece, and that was just enough for Wisconsin to be able to get that cover. And an Iowa team that has been so good on offense all season long has been one of your best over teams in all of college basketball. And Illinois, for that matter, has been a really good over team as well. Illinois overall for the season, 21 overs to 10 unders, but back-to-back unders for them. And Purdue, by the way, is now up to 21 overs to 10 unders with the game on Sunday going over, in Wisconsin, 20 overs to 11 unders. You've actually seen a lot of overs in Big Ten play. Heck, Nebraska, 19 overs, 11 unders, and a push for them. This bunch in Iowa, 20 overs to 11 unders as well, but Illinois takes them down 73-61. The final is for Iowa, 7-21 from 3, third time in their last 36 home games that they failed to get to 75 points. For Illinois, they do go just 12 of 20 at the free throw line, but Darren Shannon, he was able to throw in their 25 points, and other than the 23 points of Peyton Sanford, not much else. You were able to get 13 points in this one out of Josh Dix. Those were the lone two guys for Iowa that were able to give you north of 8 points, and they just got flattened in this one. You did have a few NCAA tournament berths get clinched. Longwood, the old Lancers, absolutely destroy UNC Asheville by a count of 85-59. This is a good rebounding team in Longwood that was able to go 7-13 from three-point range, so salute to them. You saw a nip-and-tuck game out there in the Patriot League semifinal. Colgate barely advances past Bucknell, 68-65, and Drake, they're going to the NCAA tournament. They take down Indiana State 84-80. This is not betting-related, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but man, it'd be a crying shame if one of these teams with like 13, 14 losses gets in over Indiana State. This Indiana State team is pretty good, and I recognize that they didn't have those quad one wins, but you want to know the reason why they don't have those quad one wins? And I always invite this man on the show. It's Rocco Miller, does such a great job helping these mid-majors be able to schedule. It's because nobody will want to schedule them. I mean, that's just flat out the reason why. Don't hold that against them. Hold it against the power conference teams that aren't going to give them an opportunity. But for Drake, how about what Tucker DeVries was able to do? 17 points, 7 boards, 5 assists. When watching this game, I saw two NCAA tournament teams, and hopefully that is reflected. There's only one NCAA tournament team in the A-Sun Championship, and that'd be Stetson. 94-91 the final, and for Austin Peay, they actually did score at least 75 points in every one of their games past February, so if they can make like the CBI or something like that, something to take note of. But for Stetson, they went 10 of 19 from three-point range. Jalen Blackman, 43 big points. He's one of the best microwave scores that you are going to find out there in college basketball, and it has been an interesting run thus far this season out there in the American. We saw a few games out there. Temple, after the, shall we say, suspect game against UAB, I'm still not sure what to make out of that. They went on the road and they took down UTSA. Meet me for the Roadrunners. It says Heisier Miller with a buzzer beater winner, 84-82 the final. And for the Roadrunners, they go 9 of 25 from 3. Temple has been dormant all year on offense. They go 12 of 25 from 3. Miller, who I was mentioning, rating, 16 points, 6 boards, 6 assists. So he was able to do a nice job of being able to supply the goods there. And if you're looking at this UTSA team, 20 overs to 10 unders from them. They've been able to do a nice job of being able to cash these overs for you. And then another team has been very interesting to be able to dive in on, to say the least, has been Appalachian State. They lose to Arkansas State, so that means that it's going to be James Madison against Arkansas State in the old Sun Belt Final, 67-65 the final, as for Appalachian State, they just could not get it going on offense. They were able to go 4 of 12 from 3-point range, and they were able to do a nice job of being able to get this game played under their terms. They only had 5 turnovers, so this was a very slow, very controlled game. But for Arkansas State, Caleb Fields came up with 23 points, and then you had Isaiah Nelson down low provide 13 rebounds. The bread and butter for this Appalachian State team is rebounding, 36-27. Arkansas State was able to win the rebound battle, and they get the job done. And Arkansas State, by the way, now 21-11-1 against the spread. Appalachian State, they are now 19-13 against the spread. With Texas State losing but covering against James Madison, they close out the year 18-14-1 against the spread themselves. Another team that has been pretty solid for you against the spread over the last really few seasons has been Old St. Thomas. And St. Thomas, they're now 17-11-1 against the spread, and they advance in the Summit League quarterfinal over North Dakota State, 68-58 the final, as for our good friends in St. Thomas, 11 of 22 from 3-point range. They've really been able to get it going over the last few years, so give some credit where credit is due. And they've got one of the top over teams in all of college basketball in their conference in Denver, but we shall see if they're going to be able to get past Omaha, who was able to take down North Dakota and survive in advance in the conference tournament, 73-72. Frankie Fiddler with a nice buzzer beater winner there. And then you also did see a little bit later on during the night as well, the Penn State versus Maryland game. And Maryland just continues to be one of the worst cover teams in all of college basketball. They fall by double figures on the road against Penn State, 85-69. I am not sure why Maryland was bet to being a favorite in this one, but for Maryland, they are now checking in 12-19 against the spread. Not quite Michigan's 8-23 against the spread, but it's pretty bad. And for Maryland, 7-27 from 3-point range. Not like Penn State lit it up. They went 6 of 20 from distance, but a good performance there from Penn State. They're able to get the job done. Then we did see an upset in the Big Sky tournament as well. Eastern Washington loses to Sacramento State, this by a count of 74-69. Second straight year that Eastern Washington had a really good regular season, just to see it go to mush in the conference tournament. It's a Eastern Washington team that is now 17-12-1 against the spread. We shall see if they get into an ancillary tournament, because keep in mind, these teams that they win their regular season within the conference, they no longer get that automatic bid to the NIT. Just a crying shame, to say the least. And for Eastern Washington, they do go just 6 of 26 from 3-point range. We'll talk about that a little bit more with our good friend Curtis Rogers here in a minute or two, but I do want to let you guys know what we're seeing trend-wise in college basketball. Is right now, season to date, the over is sitting at 51%, 2,728 overs to 2,617 unders. Home underdogs just have taken it on the chin. Now we're in a whole bunch of neutral court games, but 723, 775, and 24 against the spread, a 48.3% hit rate for home underdogs. I can't remember the last time I've seen that. And if you look at the last 7 days in college basketball, home underdogs went 32-52-1 against the spread. I can't remember a 7-day run with north of 50 games that was ever that bad for home underdogs. So, boy, oh boy, was that rough. And the unders, they're starting to take hold in these conference tournaments. 157 unders to 148 overs. So that's what we're seeing in college basketball right now, and that's what we all got on Sunday. Now let's turn it forward to Monday, and let's take a look at these conference tournaments with our good friend Curtis Rogers of 710 Seattle Sports. We chat with him next right here on Chris Gossips with myself, Craig Eves Peterson, now a part of the Newsom Family Podcast.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
And we're back here in Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Eeps Peterson, now part of the Beeson Family Podcast, and it is always great to be joined by this man, as Curtis Rogers. He does absolutely excellent work over at 710 Seattle Sports, taking a look at so many different things, and this time of year, it's prime college basketball season. He does such a good job on the front of taking a look at all these teams, big, small, mid-majors, you name it, he does it, and top of that, I know that he's getting set for what is going to be a tremendous baseball season as well, as he does pre- and post-game hosting for the Seattle Mariners. You're able to follow him on Twitter/Instagram at A Kid From Kent altogether. And Curtis, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Greg, always happy to hop on this podcast with you. And yeah, the madness has begun. I mean, obviously the NCAA tournament itself starts, I think it's the 21st and 22nd. But for a lot of these teams, it's already win and go home. We're seeing some craziness all throughout these conference tournaments, these early conference tournaments from some of these mid-major conferences, especially one out here west, just some craziness today in the Big Sky seeing Eastern Washington go home.
Yeah, but absolutely. And what do you make out of the Big Sky tournament right now? Because we're going to be seeing quite a bit of that action on Monday. We're going to have the two games that were already set beforehand with Montana and Portland State and Weber State versus Montana State. But, I mean, boy, oh, boy, talk about a golden opportunity for Eastern Washington gone by the wayside. Meanwhile, I just take a look at this bracket, and I think that it sets up very well for either Montana or Weber State to perhaps make it.
Yeah, boy, second year in a row, too, that Eastern has just absolutely mopped the floor in the Big Sky during the regular season. And then to see their tournament hopes go up in smoke in the conference tournament, a gut punch for Eastern, not just losing, but losing to a Sacramento State team that really just stunned that they were even in this position to knock off the top team in the Big Sky. And here they are now, a 10-win Sacramento State team is now just what one win away from a Big Sky Conference tournament final. So it's going to be just a crazy, crazy couple of days here in the Big Sky. You mentioned Weber State. You mentioned Montana State. I mean, Weber State at the beginning of the season, I think most people had them pegged as the conference favorites. But then obviously Eastern had a much different say in that during the regular season. I think Weber State is the team that I'm kind of leaning towards here to finish things off and grab that automatic berth from the Big Sky Conference. But yeah, what a crazy day between Eastern and Sacramento State. Just looking at the box score, I mean, three-point shooting not on Eastern side. And then Jake Kyman, who, you know, the UCLA transfer, just did not show up at all today. Finished with 3 points. Only had one bucket throughout the game. That was a big reason why. And then Sacramento State cleaning up the glass. They had a nice advantage on that. You couldn't really say that there was a difference in free throws, personal fouls called. It was pretty evenly called throughout the game, but it just kind of came down as it always does. Just who's making shots out there in Sacramento State? They made more than Eastern.
Yep, and sometimes that just happens this time of year. You see teams that hit shots on a few particular days out there in March, and they're able to make a run. And a team like Indiana State, they had a little bit of a rough go of it on Sunday, and now they await their fate for the NCAA tournament as well. As joining me on the show, we do have Curtis Rogers, who does amazing work over at 710 Seattle Sports, joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops. And then the other big tournament that we're really going to be seeing for Monday is the WCC tournament with St. Mary's and Gonzaga in the four. Gonzaga going to be playing San Francisco and St. Mary's Santa Clara. And I feel like we've talked about this a lot, but I feel like with regards to this conference tournament, I'd be stunned if it's not St. Mary's versus Gonzaga, by the way. But I feel like both teams are just playing their best basketball coming into the NCAA tournament. And a lot of people always want to knock the WCC for not having a lot of competition, and that's why Gonzaga hasn't won a national title and everything like that. But I think BYU is very, very good proof on what they've done this season that the WCC deserves probably a little bit more respect than what it does. And I think that both of these teams just come into this year's tournament perhaps in better form than normal, because both of these teams had rough starts to the season and really had to ascend as the season went along.
Yeah, and I think they were also helped out by them playing each other near the end of the WCC schedule, finishing off the regular season against each other, you know, having to gear up for the conference tournament with such a huge test right before then. I think both teams have benefited from that. Yeah, St. Mary's did get blown out in that game, but you know what? That is a tournament team that they faced in Gonzaga. And this time of year, you want to face the stiffest competition as possible to keep yourself ready to go when you're facing even tougher opponents that you haven't seen all year outside of, you know, just being on TV or just the game film that you're given. But yeah, I think this St. Mary's team, this Gonzaga team, they are peaking at just the right time. We've had conversations on both St. Mary's and Gonzaga all throughout this season, Greg, where at times it looked like neither one of them was a tournament team. Now they have really rounded into shape. St. Mary's nearly going perfect in the regular season in the WCC. Gonzaga really turning things around with that huge win against Kentucky, a springboard for them to get back in the NCAA tournament conversation, and now they've played their way off the bubble. I think they are squarely in the NCAA tournament now, regardless of any outcome in the WCC tournament. So, yeah, I think those two teams are on a crash course for the title game in Vegas this week. It should be a really fun one in Chapter 3 of one of the, I think, best rivalries out west.
Yeah, but it certainly is. And out west, we are going to be seeing a lot of conference tournaments out here in lovely Las Vegas. And the one that typically gets the most hype is the Pac-12, but I'm not so sure if it's going to be the best one. Curtis, I know you're a man that you've got Pac-12 roots with, having graduated from Arizona. It's very clear they're the top team in this conference. There's no debate about that, although Washington State out there in your neck of the woods, they played very well this year as well. But I just take a look at the Pac-12 tournament, and I do think that there's going to be some intrigue with those earlier round games. But for Colorado, Utah, they pretty much need to get on a run to be able to put themselves in the bubble picture of the NCAA tournament. And that's about all the sort of fanfare that there is outside of whether or not Arizona is going to be able to win it or not, because I just take a look at this conference. It's very clearly Arizona 1, Washington State 2, and can you get another team to get in for 3 bids for the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, right there with you, Greg. If Colorado and Utah can get to the Pac-12 championship game, maybe there's a path to getting off the bubble and getting into the NCAA tournament field. But even then, I think if Colorado is able to get to the Pac-12 tournament title game, then they're going to have to do it in an impressive way. We're talking, you know, double-digit victories all throughout the tournament to get to the championship game. That's what it's going to take. If it's, you know, back-to-back nail biters, last-second shots, getting them to the championship game, I don't know if that's going to impress the committee enough. You kind of need style points this time of year, even though you know, style points aren't necessarily as big of a thing in college basketball as they are in college football when trying to impress a selection committee. But, yeah, Colorado right now – that seems to be the Pac-12's only hope at getting a third team in. Maybe Utah, same thing. I am all the way out on Oregon. The only way they're going to get in to the NCAA tournament is by winning the whole dang thing. And I just don't see it happening from the Ducks right now. So the Buffaloes, 22 wins in the regular season. I don't know if it's enough. I think they're going to need at least 24, maybe even 25 if they want to be dancing come Selection Sunday.
Yeah, and for Colorado, they actually didn't do the world's worst job towards being part of the season, but those losses to the likes of Cal and just the overall sort of depth of the Pac-12, I feel like has been to their detriment. I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like the bottom of the Pac-12 this year has been a big, giant, rusty anchor for these teams like Utah, for these teams like Colorado, even to a lesser extent Oregon, though they didn't play too well out of conference themselves. So I'm not sure if a strengthened Pac-12 would have helped them out too much. But I feel like for a few of these teams out there in the Pac-12 that they might have a shot at the NCAA tournament, the underperformance of so many of these other teams just really killed their chances.
Yeah, it's crazy how the bottom of the Pac-12 this season just was so lackluster, but then all of a sudden,
and it's usually bad to start with.
It's true. It's very true. And then all of a sudden they would play very inspired basketball and come away with a victory. I mean, heck, look at Arizona, for example. I mean, they've got seven losses this season. Three have come against teams ranked 10th, 11th, and 12th in the Pac-12 this season. They've lost to Stanford, Oregon State, and then, I mean, the USC game, they didn't have anything to play for in that one except for maybe getting in one seed in the NCAA tournament. But still, USC has not been good this season despite the preseason expectations heaped upon the Trojans. It's weird. The bottom of the Pac-12 laying low, and then all of a sudden when they can absolutely ruin somebody's day and ruin somebody's tournament chances like clockwork, it happens. It reminds me, Greg, I mean, God, this is years ago. It came to mind when Mike Hopkins got fired, but the year that the Huskies won the Pac-12, it was one of the worst Power 5 conferences ever. I think they ended up getting maybe two seeds that year. Washington regular season champions ended up being a 9 seed in the NCAA tournament. And that year, I think Washington at one point was like 14-0, 15-0 in conference play. And lost to, I think it was 0-15 Cal in the regular season, which, I mean, that right there, I mean, the Pac-12 is going to be over after this week as we know it in college basketball. That right there just kind of was like one of the moments of the Pac-12 where it's like, yep, only out west, only in the Pac-12 could this possibly happen.
I'm sure that that is going to be a moment in time that everyone is going to want to put into a time capsule, dig into the ground, and never dig back up. As you're going to be on the show, we've got Curtis Rogers, who does absolutely amazing work over at 710 Seattle Sports, trying to be right here. I'm Gus Gosoops. And then I do want to talk about this tournament as well that's going to be involving both a team that is pretty near and dear to you and is going to be a tournament in my neck of the woods. That'd be the WAC tournament that's going to get started on Wednesday. And there's a team of intrigue in Seattle that I think is so fascinating because with the Seattle Bunch, they don't get the one seed out there in the WAC. That obviously goes to Old Grand Canyon. And the way that the WAC does it, by the way, they actually do it via like advanced metrics and everything like that. Yeah. So Seattle, they were not able to get one of the two major buys. That would be Tarleton State along Grand Canyon, though I will say that was actually seeding itself. Those were by far the top two teams during the regular season. But how do you foresee the WAC playing out? Because Tarleton State has been so interesting. I believe they are still 1 year removed from being eligible for the NCAA tournament, but a lot of people are chasing down Grand Canyon, but they did look a little bit wobbly towards back half of the season. And as we know, Seattle's had their number recently.
Yeah, they have. Cameron Tyson has been a phenomenal player for the Redhawks. I see Grand Canyon still being the team to beat in the WAC tournament. Seattle even finishing up the regular season against Tarleton State, I believe it was a close, close loss. But they're going to be having that opportunity, going for broke here in the WAC tournament. I am excited to see what can possibly happen between all these teams in the WAC. I mean, there's always going to be that element of randomness, even though Grand Canyon has essentially rolled their way to where they are right now. They made the tournament a year ago, so, you know, the Lopes are the team to beat for sure. But if there is going to be chaos, I mean, sure, this WAC tournament has seen it in the past. For the Redhawks to make it, I mean, it would mean so much to that program, considering what they have been historically in college basketball and kind of where they are now. It is crazy to think that at one point they were one of the premier schools in all of college basketball. And now here they are, you know, just fighting their way, hopefully to get, you know, to an NCAA tournament one day. I think they've been at the D1 level now since returning for, I think it's like 13 or 14 years. They've come close in the WAC tournament, haven't necessarily been able to break through since then, but every year they seem to be getting closer and closer. The two measures for breaking through for the Redhawks are beating Washington. They've yet to beat Washington in their return to Division I. This year they came the closest they've ever come, taking them to double overtime, losing by one, and then making the NCAA tournament, which basically winning the WAC tournament in order to get to the NCAA tournament. Neither have happened yet, but there's a lot of hope out here in Seattle one day that those Redhawks can break through. A lot of potentially good college basketball in the Pacific Northwest here in the state of Washington. I know we talked about Eastern and how they were unable to avoid the upset in the Big Sky tournament, but maybe Seattle U can reverse course and pull off an upset and find their way dancing here come Selection Sunday.
That would be very nice to see. And in the case of Tarleton State, just so unfortunate that they've got a four-year probationary period to not be allowed in the NCAA tournament. If they win this tournament, I would like to see them in, but that's the NCAA coming up with NCAA rules, as we're being joined by Curtis Rogers, who does such amazing work over at 710 Seattle Sports, trying to be right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. And Curtis, I always love to ask this question because you do such a great job looking at this great game of college basketball. Just in everything that you've seen over the last few days, who's a team or two that you're feeling a little bit more bullish/bearish on now that we've been able to see the back half of the regular season for so many of these teams, along with a few conference tournament winners be presented as well?
It's going to be the talking point, I think, up until Selection Sunday in terms of, do you let in a bubble team that is not from a Power 5 conference? And I think Indiana State kind of moves to the very front of the line with their loss to Drake. And I think it would be a disservice to not have them in the NCAA tournament. I mean, you look at what the Sycamores have done this season. I think they are a team that if they do get into the NCAA tournament, whether it be the first four or whether it be just as part of the regular field, I think they could even advance. And I mean, obviously, Dylan Avila is one of the great personalities, great stories in college basketball right now. I mean, everybody calls him kind of like Baby Jokic. I mean, that's tremendous praise for him. But I think Indiana State right now, even with the loss to Drake, I mean, you look at that net ranking, it's in the 40s, to have a tremendous resume in the regular season. I think they're worthy of a spot in the NCAA tournament. I would much rather see them than, say, one of those teams that's like 18 and 14 in the Big Ten right now. Where
Wisconsin.
There's just a giant, yeah, exactly. Oh, miss you with Wisconsin. I don't want to see them ever again, Greg. So, yeah, put Indiana State over them. And I'll be a very happy camper watching CBS.
I am from the great state of Wisconsin, and I can tell you right now, this team is playing like absolute garbage. Their net rankings are going to get them in the NCAA tournament. So if you are hoping for the downfall of Wisconsin not making the NCAA tournament, I've got bad news for you. But, man, I'm right there with you. I would much rather see a team like Indiana State, because I know that they're discussing a little bit more like Seton Hall, Colorado. These are teams that are on the bubble. Give me Indiana State all day long, and give me great analysis from our good friend Curtis Rogers. He does such good work over at 710 Seattle Sports. Curtis, love the good people at home. Know it's all on tap for you. I know people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, lots coming up here over the next week or so. Obviously, the Pac-12 tournament going on, and then we got the news of Mike Hopkins getting dismissed from Washington. So we'll be discussing that a lot. way overdue. Stanford's up next. They're the next one on the hot seat out west. So we'll be looking at the coaching search, looking at some names. I think Danny Sprinkle, he makes his way to the top of the list here. We'll see just kind of what Utah State season ends up. However long the Aggies last, I think that's kind of going to be how long this UW coaching search goes for. So we'll talk that a lot this week. And then obviously the Cougs with a first round bye in the Pac-12 tournament. They await their next opponent in the second round, so we'll see how long they go for the WCC tournament. It's everywhere, Greg. And you know it. I know it. This is the best time of year. It doesn't get any better than this. This is what we live for. Conference tournament play is so much fun, and I'm so excited for the week that is ahead.
Yep, I am as well. And Curtis, he does such amazing work taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. Every single time he joins this show, he makes us just a little bit smarter, and he did so once again today. So big thanks to Curtis for joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSUN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis out of a game on the betting board for this college basketball Monday as we hit some big shots.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Heaps Peterson, now a part of the VSiN Family of Podcasts. It is always great to be joined by Curtis Rogers, doing such good work over at 710 Seattle Sports, taking a look at this great game of college basketball that we all know and love. Every single time he joins this podcast, lends such good insights. No different today. Always brings the heat, and he is always appreciated. A big thanks to Curtis for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Monday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter/X feed at @Jaden_81. Pretty simple today. We're going in time order up until we hit the Southland. The Southland is a part of the extra games board, so those two games are going to be at the bottom. That said, we go in tip times based on the conference that goes first. So that means that the Coastal Conference will be up first, and then you go with the Horizon League. Then from there, you get into the Summit League, so on and so forth. So that'll actually keep things very clean and easy. Let's get things started with 851, 852 on the betting board. It is Towson, and they're going to be playing against Charleston. This is from our nation's capital, with Charleston opening up over at DraftKings. A 4-point favorite total on this game is 137.5. Do note that we're also going to have quite a few games that don't have numbers. A lot of the openers that you're getting, they're from DraftKings, and really there's not a lot of other places that have openers on a lot of these games, so a little bit of caution there. But that said, in terms of the spot, I did set Charleston as a 5.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. These two teams hooked up a few weeks ago. Charleston went on the road and they punked Towson by a count of 72-56. Now, Towson is going to have a nice advantage in this game on the glass. They're a top 25 team in terms of rebound rate. Charles Thompson, he's able to supply you with about 8 rebounds per game, does a very good job. Will be able to lock things down low. And for Towson, the offense has gotten a little bit better since Nenda Turk has been in the fold, missed the first 10 games of the season. It's giving you a steal and a half, 2.5 assists, throws in there 10 points per contest, but they also do shoot about 66% the free throw line in a nip and tuck game that could come back to bite them. And they go up against a Charleston team that does a much better job of taking care of the ball. Charleston is a top 85 team with regards to total possessions per game, yet they only turn the ball over 10 times per contest. Meanwhile, for this Towson bunch, they're turning the ball over closer to 12 times per game. So that's going to become a little bit of an issue. Charleston not generating the same amount of turnovers that they did a season ago, but they also do a nice job of hitting the offensive glass. While Towson is the better team in terms of overall rebound rate, Charleston is 37th in all of college basketball in terms of percentage of missed shots that they are able to get an offensive rebound on. Towson, by the way, is actually number two. They've done a really good job there, but you just flat out have better shooters with this Charleston team. You've got someone like a Rain Smith who's able to shoot north of 37% per three. He gives you double figures. Ben Burnham has been able to give you 12 points. He's a relatively good outside shooter going against a Towson unit that, I mean, overall defense is there with them, but they do allow opponents to shoot about 34% per three point. To their credit, this going into yesterday had fallen off to about 31% in a road slash shoot court environment. And this is a Charleston team that they're going to give up their looks as well. Overall, they're allowing opponents to shoot about 34% from 3-point. But who's that knockdown shooter for Towson? You've got Charles May, who's able to give you about 34% 3-point shooting, and that helps out quite a bit. But also, you've got out of your top five scorers, one guy shooting above 71% at the free throw line. It's been a little bit touch and go with regards to facilitation. Meanwhile, you've got a Charleston unit that, while they do play a little bit more of an up-tempo style, they do have quite a bit of depth. They go about 8 or 9 deep in terms of their rotation, and I think that that's going to be very big with having a main facilitator in CJ Fulton giving you 4 assists, very much a designated passer that has done a very good job of being able to keep things clean. So, did set Charleston as a 5.5-point favorite. Going to be one to lay the number, and I did set my total 139.5. Battle of the Tortoise and the Hare. I do think that this is going to be close enough for late game falling in. To the credit of Towson, it's not like this team has been amazing with their offense or anything like that, but they've had their moments recently, scoring at least 66 points in now 5 out of their last 7 games. It's a Charleston team that they just keep on rolling up 80 plus. They have gotten to at least 80 points in now each of their last 3 games and 4 out of their last 5. So looking at the over and going to be willing to lay with Charleston, made them a 5.5-point favorite. 853, 854 on the betting board. Hofstra and Stony Brook do battle from our nation's capital. Hofstra is a favorite of 5 points. So on this game, it is 142. And I set my total at 138. I'm going to be diving in on the under. Hofstra has really kicked it up in terms of their defense. They have been touch and go all season long with that regard. And for Hofstra, you do have to take note that this team is well outside the top 275 in terms of their rebound rate. But for Hofstra, they have now given up 65 points or fewer in 5 out of their last 6 games. The lone exception is when they played against Charleston. But you've got a Stony Brook team that is mas caliente right now. Now, with the Stony Brook team, they do come off of a double overtime game as well against Drexel. That has been factored in to this line, and that does mean that this team is going to be a little bit more tired after you had guys like Tyler Stevenson, Moore, Aaron Clark play north of 40 minutes yesterday. But I do like what this duo is able to give you in the backcourt. These two guys, they've been able to combine to give you about 27.5 points per contest. Stevenson, Moore shoots 42.5% from three, and the big thing for this Sunnybrook team is they keep things clean. Really, both of these teams only turn the ball over about 10.5 times per contest. It's going to come down to which team is going to be able to guard the perimeter a little bit better. Hofstra has had issues with this. They are allowing opponents to shoot about 34.5% from three-point range, about 240th in all of college basketball. And Sunnybrook, they've had their issues as well. Sunnybrook is allowing teams to shoot from three-point range right around about 34.5%. That is 20th in all of college basketball, but it does take a super drop-off away from home than that of Hofstra. But I do think that you are going to see the Sunnybrook team be able to do a little bit of a better job there, with both of these teams being somewhat tired. And Hofstra is a little bit of a one-dimensional team. You've got Darlson Dunbar along Tyler Thomas averaging about 40.5 points between these two gentlemen. They have been able to combine for about 38.5% from three-point range. And Yaquan Carlos, about 6.5 assists to 2.7 turnovers per game. But it's a Hofstra team that's not going to be able to create a whole lot of ball pressure on you. I do think that Sunnybrook is going to be able to do a better job on the glass with Andre Snoddy along with Charles Madeau being able to combine for about 13 rebounds per game. Not like the Sunnybrook team is amazing on the glass or anything like that, but in terms of the rebound rate entering into yesterday, 222nd. Meanwhile, Yako Fritz, he's got a little bit of versatility for Hofstra, but just doesn't give you too much in the way of rebounding, 288th in the country. That should be able to keep the Sunnybrook team, who has the second best cover rate in all of college basketball, lively in this one. I set my total at a 138. You've got a Hofstra team that has really been slowing it down and they have been able to do a great job of guarding all season long. And really, both of these teams, our teams are well outside the top 175 in terms of total possessions per game. So I do think that this is going to be a little bit of a slower slog of a game. I'm going to be taking a look at the under, and I do like the points here with Sunnybrook set them as a 4-point dog, 855, 856 on the betting board. It is Cleveland State and Oakland doing battle from Indiana Farmers Coliseum. And with Oakland, they open up a 4.5-point favorite. Now they're between a 5 to a 5.5-point favorite, and totals between 145 to 145.5, down from the opener of 146.5. And now this is getting into my buy point on the over. I did set my total at a 146 for Cleveland State. Their bread and butter is being able to generate turnovers, going up against an Oakland team that does a nice job of being able to protect the ball. But additionally for Oakland, you're going to get your opportunities from three against them. They are allowing opponents to shoot 35.1% from distance, 259th in all of college basketball. Now, must throw this in there. They've actually guarded the three-point arc better on the road rather than at home. And for Oakland, when they've been away from home, they're giving up more than 10 points fewer per 100 possessions rather than at home. One of the strangest splits I've ever seen in my life, but when they've gotten away from their home environment, they've done a great job of D'ing up. Meanwhile, this Cleveland State, they put the clamps on you with regards to your three-point shooting percentage. 16th in the country in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage, and they go up against an Oakland team that they do rely quite a bit on the three ball. You've got Trey Townsend, who's got really good versatility. He's been able to supply the team with about 17 points, 7 boards per contest. And then you got someone like Jack Oakey, who's been able to give you about 10 to 11 points per contest as well. But this is a Cleveland State team that's doing a really nice job of defending, being able to put on your ball pressure. They've seen their three-point shooting go downward a little bit as well. Cleveland State as a whole, they are only shooting about 33% from three-point range. But Tristan Enruna is the most versatile player out there on the floor. 6.5 boards, 3 assists, 20 points per game. And then you've got Drew Lauder along Tate Williams, who have been able to supply the team with a combined about 24.5 points, 4.5 assists. And for this Cleveland State team, out of your top 7 scorers, all but one of them is able to generate at least 0.9 steals per contest as well. It's a pretty deep team going up against an Oakland unit that just continues to get nothing out of Rocket Watts. You've been able to get some production, about 10 points per contest, out of Chris Conway for an Oakland team that overall shoots 35% from 3, and they are the better free throw shooting team. In a nip and duck game, Oakland shoots 76% at the free throw line. That's going to prove to be somewhat big, but I do think that Cleveland State is going to be able to do a solid job here. Cleveland State comes in playing very good defense, giving up 71 points or fewer in each of their last 5 games. Meanwhile, you do have an Oakland team that has gotten to at least 75 and 4 of the last 5 games. So, good old situation of something's got to give with this a natural basketball environment. I don't think that that's going to be affecting things too much in terms of the shooting. Last time these two teams played, Oakland on their home floor won by a count of 83-71, and Oakland does have a way of really getting things to be a little bit harebrained and just being a little bit out of sorts. But I do think the Cleveland State, despite the fact that they are going to lose the battle on the glass, they have the worst rebound rate in this one. They're going to be able to generate some turnovers to be able to hold in this game. Not sure why this number has moved off the opener 4.5. I set my line at 2, so I'm going to be willing to take a look at the points. And now that we've had this total bogged down to a 145, I'm looking at the over. Set my total at 146. 857, 858 on the bank board. UW Milwaukee is on the road. They're facing up against Northern Kentucky. Northern Kentucky, a favorite of a point. Total on this game is 151. And may Northern Kentucky, a 2.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay this number with UW Milwaukee. They just have an innate ability to be able to really crank things up tempo. With UW Milwaukee well outside the top 320 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, and they go up against another Kentucky team as a top 30 team in the country in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. And for Milwaukee, they're turning the ball over 12.7 times per contest in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis. Bottom 75 team in all of college basketball, though. Milwaukee's going to have the best overall player in this game. That'd be BJ Freeman. 4.5 assists, 7 boards, 21 points per contest. Shoots 36% per three. And for this UW Milwaukee team, a top 175 team in terms of rebound rate, Northern Kentucky well outside the top 200. You really have nobody outside of Trey Robinson giving you north of 5.5 rebounds per game, but Marcus Warwick is able to be a nice go-to scorer. He gives you about 20.5 points per contest. Now, Northern Kentucky, they themselves do turn the ball over about 12.5 times per contest, and having Sam Vincent out of the fold really did hurt this team in terms of being able to generate some of those turnovers, but I still do think that Northern Kentucky is going to be able to do a solid job of managing up here, because you take a look at the last time these two teams played, you have to go back to the 17th of February. That was 73-72 on UW Milwaukee's home floor, and Northern Kentucky loses that game shooting 6 of 22 from three-point range, but own the turnover battle. They did a relatively solid job playing pretty even up in terms of the glass. They were able to grab nearly as many rebounds as UW Milwaukee. And UW Milwaukee, in terms of percentage of missed shots that an opponent has, they are in the bottom 25 in all of college basketball, the amount of offensive rebounds they give up. Now, they themselves are top 25 team in terms of offensive rebounding on their misses as well. That's why you've had such high totals in this game. Both teams are able to get so many missed shots as an offensive rebound that it does lead to a lot of scoring. But for UW Milwaukee, outside of Freeman, you really don't have a lot of facilitation with this team. They've been looking a little bit more out of Elijah Jamison, who's been able to give about 2.5 assists per contest. And I do think that the way that Northern Kentucky is able to force these turnovers, and the way that Northern Kentucky has cranked up their offense as well, 75 plus points for their last five games, they do find a way to be able to get the job done here. I did set my line at 2.5. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 2, and did set my total at a 154.5, also in on the over. 859, 860 is a game with no numbers up, as it is St. Thomas and South Dakota State doing battle, and with this one, I made South Dakota State a 3-point favorite and made my total 143. So willing to lay up to 2.5 with South Dakota State, 3.5 or more, taking the points with St. Thomas, and then 142.5 or less, looking at the over, 143.5 or higher. I'm going to be diving in on this total under with St. Thomas. They play at one of the slowest and grimiest styles in all of college basketball, but little do a lot of people know, South Dakota State has been well outside the top 250 in terms of total possessions per game. They're just really, really good at executing on offense. As a matter of fact, for a South Dakota State team, they're a top 25 team in all of college basketball in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. And I mean, they shoot it well from 3-point range, but it's not just all about the 3-point shot. As South Dakota State overall, in terms of their 3-point shooting percentage for the season, they are checking in currently number 50 in all of college basketball, hitting about 36.7% of their shots away from home. But you got a guy in Zeke Mayo who just does it all, 3.5 assists, 6 boards, 19 points per contest. William Kyle is able to give you about 6.5 rebounds, 1.7 blocks per contest. Charlie Easley, Luke Capel, they combine for 24 points and both shoot north of 40% from 3-point range. As South Dakota State has done a nice job being able to grab a lot of second chances on the boards, and they go up against the St. Thomas team that is outside the top 225 in terms of rebound rate. They don't have a single guy that gives you north of 4.7 rebounds per game, as you've got Raheem Anthony along with Parker Jorklin, who have combined for 26 points, 9.5 boards, and Anthony does shoot 48% from 3-point range. And while the South Dakota State team is absolutely incredible with their offensive efficiency, they are well outside the top 275 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, and they allow opponents away from home to shoot 36.5% from 3-point range. So lots of opportunities should be had for a St. Thomas team that does have quite a few of their ancillary pieces, like Brooks Allen, like Carter Bajerke, being able to shoot it well from 3-point range. As a matter of fact, for Bajerke, he's been able to give you 5.5 points, shoots 45.5% from 3-point range. For a core that shoots 36% from 3, they're a top 30 team in all of college basketball in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis, and St. Thomas has been able to get their offense going a little bit more. 68 plus points in 5 out of their last 6 games. The South Dakota State team, they just continue to be a machine with regards to their offense. Last time this team scored fewer than 75 2 points was about 7 games ago. And the last time these two teams hooked up, it was a 77-72 win for South Dakota State. That was on their home floor. Now, both teams did shoot it well from three-point range. A combined 16 out of 41 from three-point range. But in that game, you also had 28 turnovers. I do think that things are going to be a little bit more clean there. And I do think that you're going to be getting a relatively mid-tempo game. I do think that with St. Thomas, they are going to see a little bit of drop-off with regards to shooting from what we saw the first time around. They've been an okay team at being able to guard the arc. Not amazing, not terrible for St. Thomas. They are allowing opponents to shoot about 33.4% from three-point range. So, circumstance where I did set South Dakota State as a three-point favorite, want to lay up to 2.5 with them, 3.5 for more. I'm going to be willing to take those points with St. Thomas, and then 142.5 for less, looking at the over 143.5 for higher. I'm going to be diving in on the under, and then 861, 862 is Denver playing against Omaha, and this is going to be out there on a neutral court once again. They are going to be doing this from the Sanford Premier Center in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and in this one, I did set Denver as a 2.5-point favorite and a total of 156.5. So two or less, I'm going to be willing to lay the number with Denver. Three or more, I would be willing to take the points with Omaha. And then 156 or less, looking at the over 157 or higher, I'm going to be diving in on the under. Denver is all gas, no breaks. Denver is a top 55 offense in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, a bottom 50 defense in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, and they are 348th in all of college basketball in terms of opponents' three-point shooting percentage. Now for Nebraska-Omaha, they're not too much better at being able to guard the three-point arc, 312th in all of college basketball. And though Tommy Bruner is right now your top scorer in all of college basketball, he's a do-it-all scorer that's able to give you north of 24 points per contest, Denver just supports him a little bit better. You've got Tuki Tonamo, who's been able to give you 15.5 points, 7.5 boards, shoots 34.5% from three-point range. You've been able to get a little bit out of your number three option in Jackson Brenchley, 11 points, 3 assists, shoots 38.5% from three-point range. But then, even past that, someone like Isaiah Adu Ankara, he's been able to give you 6.5 points, shoots it well from three-point range. Meanwhile, for Omaha, love what you're able to get out of Frankie Fiddler, especially 19.5 points, 6 boards, shoots 36% from three. He was able to send this Omaha team to the spot. And then Markel Sutton, about 6.5 boards, 12.5 points per game. Past that, there's not a lot for the team. You don't have a single guy that helps out with north of 3 assists per contest. You've got one guy outside those two that gives you north of 3 rebounds per game. You've seen some regression from J.J. White after he was a nice facilitator from a season ago. And both of these teams, they do a nice job of being able to protect the ball. Both of these teams in the top 65 in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis. So I do think that they're going to be able to keep it relatively clean there. But I do think that for Denver, they just have a little bit more to be able to edge this one out just in terms of the depth itself. And you take a look at this Nebraska-Omaha team, they're just not a good rebounding team in general. Nebraska-Omaha, 255th in all of college basketball with regards to rebound rate. Denver, not impressive, but 213th. I do think that that's going to be able to win out in the spot. So didn't make my line 2.5. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 2 with Denver and then 3 or more. Taking the points with Nebraska-Omaha and then 156 or less. Looking at the over 157 or higher, I'm in on the under. 863-864. That would be the Sun Belt Championship between Arkansas State and James Madison. This is from Pensacola, Florida. James Madison is a favorite of 7 points. So on this game is 157.5. And I said James Madison as an 8-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the 7. This Arkansas State team has been very much a different team on offense when they've been away from home rather than when they've been at home. As a matter of fact, for Arkansas State, they see a drop-off of north of 20 points per 100 possessions away from home rather than when they are at home. And at home, Arkansas State shooting well north of 41.5% from three-point range. In a roadside shooting court venue, they're shooting less than 33% from three-point range. Going up against the James Madison team that we all want to talk about the offense and how up-tempo they play, this is also a top 25 team in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis with just more options in general. For James Madison, it was Noah Friedel that really bailed them out yesterday with 28 points. But I mean, he's really like the number two, number three scorer for the team. As Terrence Edwards is your number one guy. 17.5 points, 4.5 boards, shoots 36% from three. James Madison should also be able to match up with Arkansas State on the glass. Arkansas State just outside the top 85 with regards to a rebound rate. James Madison just within the top 100 themselves, so they should be relatively even up there. Though I do like with the game of TJ Bickerstaff, what he's been able to supply with about 8.5 rebounds per game. And then you've got good facilitation with Michael Green, giving you 3.5 assists per contest. Meanwhile, on the flip side for Arkansas State, you do have a really nice quartet of guys that are able to all give you double figures. As a matter of fact, 5 different guys that give you double figures with Freddie Hicks now in the fold. Nobody gives you north of 12.8 points per game. Taron Todd is a leader with that regard, but Caleb Fields is able to give you 5.5 assists per game. Team only turns the ball over as well about 11.5 times per contest, so they keep it relatively clean there. And last time these two teams played, it was a relative nip and tuck game. James Madison won that game on the road 77-73, but I do want to bring this up as well. James Madison was up double figures with about 2 minutes remaining before You had some late game tomfoolery and some fouling, so I do think that James Madison going to be able to go out there, going to be able to dominate an Arkansas State team that does have DeAndre Dominguez, who does a solid job giving the team right around about 7 or so rebounds per game. But I do think that in the end, James Madison, their overall depth, they just are a better form of Arkansas State and a team that's less reliant on the three ball. James Madison, they also do a good job of taking away the three ball. Meanwhile, you've got an Arkansas State team that have really been giving it up on defense. They are outside the top 275 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. We'll say they're actually giving up far fewer points per 100 possessions when they're away from home rather than when they are at home. But big giant red flag to me, especially against the James Madison team that will lock you down from three-point range, being a top five team in all of college basketball in terms of opponents' three-point shooting percentage. So, did set my total 154. I do think that you get a high-scoring game, but I do think that that James Madison defense is going to be able to hold up. So, it's a circumstance where I'm looking at the under of James Madison willing to lay up to 7.5 with them. 865, 866 on the betting board. East Tennessee State and Sam I am for a new battle for the SoCon Championship out there in Asheville. And Samford opens up a 10.5 point favorite with a total of 151.5. This just feels a little bit disrespectful to ETSU. The last time they played against Samford, they were 10.5 point underdogs, but that was in a true road game. I set my line at 7.5. I'm going to be willing to take the points. With East Tennessee State, they're not a great three-point shooting defense, but they're not a bad one. They're about 173rd in all of college basketball in this regard, and that's where they're going to need to maximize. The Samford team, they've got a lot of nice attributes. They're a top 30 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. They have a point guard in Ryland Jones that gives you north of 5 assists to less than 2 turnovers per game. Samford does a solid job on the glass, but Samford is about 197th in the country in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage. Now, it's more like 36% at home in a road slash neutral court setting. That actually bogs down to more like 32%, but this ETSU team as well, they're able to do a relatively solid job of being able to hang in there on the glass. They've got a lot of guys that are able to give you north of 5 plus rebounds per game, and I do think that that's going to be able to keep them active in this spot as well. This is a East Tennessee State team that they don't necessarily maximize from three-point range as a collective. They've only been able to shoot in that neighborhood about 31% from three, with Ibi Asamoah, your top scorer, giving you 15.5 points. Being able to shoot 36% from three and 4 boards per contest, really leading the way, but each of your top 5 scorers give you at least 4 rebounds per game. 3 of those guys give you at least 6 rebounds per contest. You've got Jaden Parker, Karen Boyd, Jade Seymour, that all do a solid job there, with Parker being able to give you 2.5 blocks per contest, and I think that might be tough for the Samford team to be able to keep up with. You've got Anchor. It gives you 15 points, 5.5 boards, and really for the Samford team, you've got just a plethora of 3-point shooting. You've got each of your top 6 scorers, actually top 7 scorers, shooting at least 35% from 3-point range, but it is the Samford team that they can be out a little bit more on the glass as well. They're about 179th in the country in rebound rate, but having ETSU have all the depth that they do, with ETSU, they've really done a nice job of being able to buckle down on defense as well, other than the game that we saw yesterday against Chattanooga, where, I mean, that was just a little bit harebrained. They had been giving up fewer than 66 points in each of their previous 4 games. Meanwhile, it's a Samford team that they were able to hit the over yesterday because things just went completely haywire late. You saw north of 30 points in the final 230 in that game against Furman, so I do think that ETSU has a chance to be able to do a solid job holding in your last time these two teams played. Samford did allow ETSU to go 10 of 25 for 3-point range. ETSU was doomed by the fact that they did lose that turnover battle 15-12, but I do think that ETSU has a chance to be able to win the battle on the glass, to be able to hold in their semi-line at 7.5, so I'm going to be taking a look at the points with ETSU, and I do think that this sort of a structure where you've got these back-to-backs, it really does wear out the team that looks to play much more up-tempo and air-brain like Samford, and I do think that that's going to hurt this total. I think that ETSU gets a little bit more of their style. Semi-total 149.5, looking at the under and the points with East Tennessee State. 867, 868 on the betting board. It is Weber State and Montana State, and this is the DK Network write-up pick. Let's hope to get online with these, as Weber State out there in Boise, Idaho is a 5.5 to a 6-point favorite. And your total on this game, it is 142. You may recall last week I did a write-up for the Monday podcast of an under in Montana State versus Weber State. We are going right back to it, as Weber State is 328th in all of college basketball in terms of total possessions per game. They really turn things into a little bit of an eyesore, and you're just not going to be able to maximize the possessions in this game. Neither of these teams do a good job of being able to generate second chances. Montana State, they grab just 18.6% of their misses as an offensive rebound. That ranks in the bottom 5 in all of college basketball. basketball. Meanwhile, you've got a bunch in Weber State that in a road or neutral court environment, they're only grabbing 19.9% of their misses as an offensive rebound. That's 335th in off-college basketball. Now, Weber State, they are 75th in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, but home and road, they're a completely different team. At home, they are averaging 13 more points per 100 possessions than they do away from home. They shoot 37.2% for three-point range at home. That bogs down to 31.7% away from home. Facing off against the Montana State team, that is 60th in all of college basketball in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage. Now, the Montana defense are in 24th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, but they do a nice job generating turnovers. They are getting a turnover on 19.3% of possessions away from home. That is 32nd in all of college basketball. And the last time these two teams played, that was last Monday, and the game went under. You saw Montana State did a bunch of crazy shots. They were able to be lights out from three-point range, and both teams as a whole, they shot 38.6% from three. They had 21 turnovers in that game, which, I mean, I would expect that to be a relatively similar number here, and you still were able to get an under in that spot. And I think that we're going to be seeing the exact same here. Now you've got a do-or-die situation with NCAA hopes on the line. Now, I do also think that Weber State is going to be able to get a bit more online with regards to their shooting. Montana State was shooting darn near 50% from three a few nights ago. Meanwhile, Weber State, they couldn't hit water if they fell out of a boat, and you've got Dylan Jones, and I really love the game of Dylan Jones. He's been able to supply this team with 20 points, 10 boards, 5 assists. He's a do-it-all sort of player going up against a Montana State team that has that in themselves in Robert Ford, who's been able to supply 7.5 boards, 15 points. He's able to give you a few assists with Eddie Turner down for what, giving you 3.5 assists per contest. And you do have a pair of teams that they shoot it relatively okay from three. I mentioned the home and road splits of Weber State. Montana State, less demonstrative. They're shooting 36% from distance, but and you do have a little bit of a top-heavy team with Weber State, as well as you've got Jones having to do a little bit of everything. Top of that, you've been able to have Blaze Threat along with Zeven Verplank and being able to give you about 22.5 points per contest, which does cause them to play a little bit more slowly. Meanwhile, you've got a Montana State team that you've got Brandon Walker, Brandon Goraki, who have been able to combine for about 27 points per contest, but they really don't give you a lot of shot blocking down low. It's a bunch that they just don't have a lot of size, which means that they're not going to be able to hit the glass too much. And I do think that in a game that's going to be involving a lot of one and done possessions, in a game where I do think that Dylan Jones is going to be able to take hold a little bit more, Montana State just doesn't hit the shots that they did last week, then we're going to get another slog by. Right up here is going to be on the under. And with Weber State, I did set them as a 7-point favorite. I do think that they hit those shots that they didn't hit a few nights ago, and I think the Montana State cools down as well. So my write-up is going to be on the under, and with Weber State, we'll lay up to 6.5 with them. 869, 870 on the betting board. It is Montana, and they're going to be playing us a Portland State. Also out there in the great state of Idaho, with Montana being a 7-7.5 point favorite. Total on this game, it is 145.5. Opener was 6, and I thought that the 6 opener was the proper number. I set my number at 6, so here at 7 plus, I'm going to be willing to take those points with Portland State. Portland State actually did play against this Montana team a few weeks ago. Went on the road, lost in Missoula by a count of 82-73 in that game for Montana. They shot just 8-27 from three-point range, and this is a Portland State team as well outside the top 275 with regards to opponent's three-point shooting percentage, but Montana is well outside the top 250 in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage as well, and you've got a Montana team that just is not sharp with their defense in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Montana, 266th in all of college basketball, giving up about 9.5 points more per 100 possessions when they leave home rather than when they are at home. And Portland State has actually been 139th in this category. They've been able to do a solid job with their holes greater than the sum of its parts approach. They've got a guy that they've been featuring a little bit more in KJ Allen, who's able to spy you with about 7 boards, 13 points per game, shoots 37% from 3, and it's just really good, just overall balance with Portland State. Each of your top 3 scores do shoot between 36.5% and 37% from 3-point range. Ishmael Abib has been able to give you about 3 assists, 9.5 points per contest. As for a Portland State team that is playing quite a bit more slowly this year than they did a season ago. And for Montana, this is a top 50 offense in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, but they are still a team that's about 300th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. You've got someone in Deshaun Thomas who's been very versatile, 12.5 points, 5.5 boards, shoots 41.5% from three. And for Montana, their bread and butter is being able to pop it from 3-point range. As a collective, they are shooting about 36% from distance with Aiden Moody. He's in the Moody to be able to give you some points. She's 91% the free throw line, 39% from three-point range, and has been able to supply the team with 16.5 points per game, and that does need to be mentioned as well. The Spontaneous team, along with them, shooting it well from distance. Each of their top six scorers do shoot at least 80% the free throw line. Now, because they do settle for a lot of threes, they don't get to the free throw line a ton, but they're very capable of being able to hit those shots for Montana. They're shooting about 36.8% from three at home on the road slash shoot court environment, more around 35% from distance. Meanwhile, for Portland State, it's been very much more touch and go for them. For Portland State, they're only shooting about 30% from the outside when they are away from home, but I do think that they're going to be able to do a relatively solid job on the glass. Lalu Okay has been able to give this Montana team as well about 6.5 to 7 rebounds per game. This for a Montana team that, with regards to their overall rebound rate, they've been relatively solid at about 129th. Portland State, they're checking in more like 226th, but I do think that Portland State being able to keep these possessions clean, Portland State doing a nice job with their interior defense, and just the way that they've been able to slow down games as well. They've now given up 73 points or fewer in four of their last five games. You've got a Montana team that has been a little bit over the place with that defense, giving up 73 plus in two of their last four. I do think that Portland going to be able to hold in there. I did set my line at a 6, so I'm going to be willing to take the 7 plus, and I did set my total more around a 146. I do think that there's going to be some late game fouling, even though it's a low possession game. You do have a Montana team that executes on offense and does not execute on defense. So looking at the over and the points with Portland State, 871, 872 on the betting board. St. Mary's is going to be playing against Santa Clara from lovely Las Vegas, and it is St. Mary's who's a 9 to a 9.5 point favorite. Total on this game is 134.5, and with St. Mary's, I did set them as an 11.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay this number. By the way, for this Santa Clara team, they're the only team since the beginning of the month of December to exceed 70 points against St. Mary's. You may recall the last time these two teams played about a month or so ago, it was domination by St. Mary's early on, and then you had Santa Clara just get on this big giant burner run to be able to make it a close game. I just don't think that Lightning is going to be striking twice in this circumstance, as for St. Mary's, the team is in the top five nationally with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis, even though they have been without Joshua Jefferson, who's been one of their top rebounders. Mitchell Saxon has been able to lock it down low, as he and Alex Dusas have been able to combine for 13 rebounds per game, and you've been able to have the duo of Ada Mahaney along with Augustus Marisolinas be very versatile out there in the backcourt for St. Mary's. These two guys shoot about 35% from three, combined for 7.5 assists, 26 points per game. Meanwhile, you've got a Santa Clara unit that the biggest fear that you have with them is that they get a little bit too sloppy with it. About 13 turnovers per game. They do shoot about 35% from three, and they've got tremendous size. Johnny O'Neill, Christoph Tilly, our pair of guys are able to pop it from three. They give you combined about 11 rebounds per game. So I do think that Santa Clara going to be able to do a relatively solid job on the glass in terms of the overall rebound rate this season for Santa Clara. They're 14th in off-college basketball. Problem is, St. Mary's is number one. And with this Santa Clara team just having a bunch of guys that have been a little bit of heat check guys all season long, you know what you're going to be able to get out of Adama Ball, Carlos Marshall. These two guys have been able to supply the team with about 27.5 points per contest, with Marshall shoots 41.5% for three. But what are you going to be able to get out of someone like Tyree Bryan, who's been able to give you about 8.5 points per contest? He has scored 9 points or fewer in 4 of the last 5 games. It's been very touch and go with him. Meanwhile, for St. Mary's, it just feels like on any given night, someone is going to be able to step up for the team. And with the Santa Clara Broncos unit as well, it's going to be interesting to see how they play from the perimeter as well, because for Santa Clara, they have to face off against a St. Mary's unit that has been very good at being able to lock teams down from 3-point range. For St. Mary's, they are checking in right around about 78th in the country in terms of opponents' 3-point shooting percentage, but away from home, 29.6%. That is a top 15 mark in all of college basketball. Meanwhile, for the old Broncos of Santa Clara, they're allowing teams to shoot from 3-point range more in that neighborhood of about 32.5% away from home. They've been able to do a solid job with that respect, and for Santa Clara, in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, they're not quite as impressive as those 3-point numbers would seem to indicate, as currently they're checking in terms of just points allowed at about 116th, and they do give up 13.7 points more per 1-hour possessions when they leave home rather than when they are at home. But I think that they do an okay job with the defense. I just think that at the same time, the St. Mary's team is just so dominant in the way that they swarm with regards to their defense. That's going to take it out of a Santa Clara team that they themselves have given up at least 79 points in 3 of their last 5 games. I do think that this turns into a little bit of a lower scoring slog. So my total 133.5, diving under, and St. Mary's want to lay up to 11.5 with them. And we will wrap things up before we hit the extra games with 873, 874 gone. Gonzaga and San Francisco. San Francisco opened up as an underdog of 8.5 points. Now we're finding anywhere between 7.5 and 8. Total on this game, it has fallen way down. This opened up at a 151.5. We're down to 148 to 148.5. And I know that this would have fallen way down. I probably would have made the right up the over in this spot. Not going to lie to you, but with Gonzaga, it could only make them a 7-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take the 8 here with San Francisco. San Francisco has played Gonzaga pretty tough throughout the last few seasons, and for the Dons, you're going to be able to have one of the more dominant low post players in this game in Jonathan Mogbo. 14.5 points, 10.5 boards, ceiling half per contest. Now, the problem is, nobody outside of Mogbo really gives you north of 3.5 rebounds per game for the San Francisco team, and you've got two dominant post players for this Gonzaga team as Graham Ike, Anton Watson. They're combining for about 31 points per contest, 14.5 rebounds. Watson is able to shoot 44% from distance, so they have been able to do a nice job with that. Respecting Gonzaga is up to the top 5 in all of college basketball in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. While this is a San Francisco team that they are outside the top 225 in terms of total possessions per game, they're a top 30 defense in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis as well. But I do think that they're going to be able to do a relatively solid job of holding in this game, because away from home, they're allowing opponents to shoot just 32.5% from 3-point range. Meanwhile, you do have a Gonzaga unit that, while they are so much improved with their defense from a season ago, they're still about 168th in all of college basketball in terms of opponents' 3-point shooting percentage. You've got Marcus Williams, who's done a nice job doling out about 4 assists per contest. He's throwing in there about 14 points per contest. Malik Thomas has been a nice knockdown shooter at about 38.5% from the outside. And for Gonzaga, the guard play has really stepped up. Ryan Nemhard had a rough start to the season and still shooting only about 31.5% from three, but he's been much better recently. Nolan Hickman, 14 points per contest. And for Gonzaga, they've been able to find a little bit more tempo. They're not turning the ball over as much. They come in having scored at least 86 points in 4 of their last 5 games. And last time they did play against San Francisco, unlike the first time where it was close at the Kennel, they did blow out San Francisco. That was by a count of 86 to 68 in a game where, I mean, these two teams really didn't shoot it well from three. A combined 10 of 35 from 3-point range. Gonzaga just really executed. They had 17 turnovers, but went 30 of 48 from the floor. I don't think that they're going to be quite as effective this time around, but I also don't think that they have the 17 turnovers like they did the first time around. But I also think that San Francisco is going to shoot much better than 7 of 14 from the free throw line, sub 30% from 3-point range. Just overall for the season, this team does shoot about 75.5% from the free throw line. I do think that you're going to get much better offensive execution this time around, despite the fact that last game did go over. And I do think that it allows San Francisco to hold in this game. Semi total 155, looking at the over, and won't take anything north of 7 here with San Francisco. Now we hit our 2 extra games.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
3-6-5-17, 3-6-5-18. New Orleans and Lamar do battle from Lake Charles, Louisiana, with Lamar, a 9.5-point favorite. Total on this game is 158.5. Semi-total 156.5. I'm looking at the under. Fully recognize that this New Orleans team has been ghastly on defense. They are outside the top 300 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis and opponent's 3-point shooting percentage. And I do think that that is going to be a little bit of their undoing, but I could only set my line at 8.5. Here at 9.5, I'm going to be willing to take a look at the points. Lamar's a little bit more of the just spread out, good distribution sort of team. You've got Adam Hamilton, B.B. Knight, Scary Terry Anderson, Chris Pryor, all giving you at least 7.5 points per contest. And you've got a pair of guys in Anderson and Pryor that do combine for a little bit north of 6 assists per contest. Jakavian Buckley also gives you about 7.5 points, 3 assists per contest as well. But Lamar does get into trouble with the turnovers. They do turn the ball over about 13 times per contest. New Orleans, not an amazing team at generating turnovers, but they're a little bit above average. They generate about 7.7 steals per game, and the top scorer in this game, that belongs to New Orleans, and Jordan Johnson. He's been able to log for the team 21.5 points, about 4 assists per contest, went off for 34 against Southeast Louisiana a few nights ago, and he has really been on one recently. He's been a little bit touch and go here in conference play, but 21-plus points in 4 of the team's last 5 games. Now, last time he faced off against Lamar, that was a little bit of a less than savory performance, as Caleb Wilson-Rouse, the only other guy for New Orleans that averages double figures, he was actually the top scorer in that game with 20 points, but he could be a nice little crutch for him as well. And this is a Lamar unit that has been inside the top 225 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, but they do, away from home, allow opponents to shoot 36.2% from 3-point range. While New Orleans is by far the lesser defense in this spot, that's not too far away from their overall number. Away from home, this is a New Orleans team that they allow opponents to shoot about 35.2% from 3-point range. So I do think the New Orleans is going to be able to do a relatively solid job of holding in there. Lamar is a bit more on the glass. Jamon Vincent, along with Tyson Jackson, will be able to combine for about 11 rebounds per game for New Orleans, but it's very clear that they're outgunned. They're well outside the top 275 in terms of their overall rebound rate. And While you do have Hamilton give you about 6 rebounds per game for Lamar, and they are going to be able to win that battle down low. They're still only about 150th in the country with regards to hitting the glass, and I do think that the efforts of Jordan Johnson going to be able to keep this team lively against a Lamar unit that, I mean, they themselves have really been having a bit of an issue with offensive consistency, having scored 70 points or fewer in 3 of their last 5 games. So I did set my total 156.5, even though New Orleans is harebrained and up-tempo. I think we've run a little bit too far with the total, looking at the under and the points with New Orleans. Set them as an 8.5-point underdog, and we wrap things up with 3-6-5-19, 3-6-5-20. It is Nichols taking on Texas A&M Commerce. Commerce is an underdog of 6.5 points with your total 138. Made Nichols an 8-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. Nichols has such a dynamic duo in Deontay Smith along Jamal West, giving you about 29.5 points, 14 rebounds, 5.5 assists. With Smith, he throws in their 2 seals and shoots 39% from 3-point. Just for a Nichols team that is now shooting about 36.5% from 3-point. And Nichols has been a interesting team with regards to their perimeter defense, and one that has been about 53rd in all of college basketball in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage. They go up against a Texas A&M Commerce team that they do a nice job of generating some turnovers. They're in the top 125 with regards to turnovers forced on a per possession basis, but bottom 20 team in terms of rebound rate. Texas A&M Commerce 222nd in all of college basketball in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage, and they've just been dealing with injuries in general. Jerome Brewer, their number 2 scorer, is currently out of the fold, so that means that Kalen Williams has to do a little bit of everything for the squad, and he's been solid, being able to supply the team with a little bit north of 16.5 points per contest. He's from 3-point range, shooting about 31.5% for 3, but it's also a Commerce team that they only shoot about 31.7% from the outside, and they go up against a Nichols team that should be able to win that battle down low. Not necessarily an amazing rebounding team at 295th, but it's a lot better than being outside the top 300, as you've got a Commerce team that does turn the ball over themselves about 12 times per contest. Tommy Lewis has been able to step up, giving the team 12.5 points per contest, but you've just got a bunch of ancillary pieces banged up as well. Like Zandre Garrett is back in the fold after he was missing for darn near a month. Tommy Lewis has been a nice consistent scorer for the team, but Kuu Agua, he's been in and out of the fold a little bit recently as well. He had 16 cool points in the team's game against Northwestern State yesterday, but got a lot of guys that have just been in and out of the fold. It's caused for a lot of, shall we say, turmoil in the offense, and it's caused for a lot of versatility in general being needed out of these guys that they haven't been able to deliver on. Meanwhile, you've got a Nichols team that has been able to do a very solid job of getting their offense up and running. For Nichols, they have now been able to get to at least 80 points in 4 out of their last 6 games, and the last time they took on Texas A&M Commerce, they were able to mop the floor with them by kind of 85-70 on a day where Texas A&M Commerce allowed them to shoot 11-24 from 3. I think that that's going to be bogged down a little bit, but Nichols actually lost a turnover battle in that one, 10-9, and I do think that Nichols, they're probably going to turn the ball over a little bit more in this spot, but I think we've went too low with this total. Nichols is really getting things going on offense. I made them an 8-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay it in. Did so by total at a 142, also looking at the over, and that will wrap things up for the Monday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Big thanks to Curtis Rogers, who does such great work over at 710 Seattle Sports. He joined me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you'll find 2 ways we'll fire those in. First one is my Twitter /xtimeline at GNN_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. Other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season, and that means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Want to increase your salary? Discover your earning potential with CareerBuilder. CareerBuilder.com knows you have superpowers that make you good to your job.
They're called skills. And CareerBuilder.com has tools specially designed to help you move up, like CareerBuilder CoLab. Check out resume examples. Learn what recruiters are looking for. Search salaries. And view different career paths based on your skills. You'll be amazed to know how many ways you can use the skills you already have to build your future. Visit CareerBuilder.com.